Welcome to Radio Oldie, brought to you by Bailey Gifford. This is a recording from the monthly Oldie Literary Lunch at the National Liberal Club. To book a ticket, please go to www.theoldie.co.uk/lunches. The first speaker, Frances Wilson, is an extremely distinguished literary biographer, but her most important job is as the Oldies TV reviewer. But she has written much celebrated literary biographies, which have won many prizes. She's written biographies of Dorothy Wordsworth, Thomas De Quincey, D.H. Lawrence, and wrote a prize-winning book about the Titanic. And her latest book is Electric Spark, The Enigma of Muriel Spark, which is shortlisted for the Bailey Gifford Prize in a month's time. So, ladies and gentlemen, Frances Wilson.
Thank you, Harry. Can you all hear me?
Yes.
By too close
no,
to
no,
mic.
No, close
okay.
Good.
Right. So, Muriel Spark had superpowers. Even as a child, she was aware of what she called a definite something beyond myself, an access to knowledge I couldn't possibly have gained through normal channels, including what she called a sixth literary sense, which was available only to a few writers and critics, herself included. She suffered, I believe, from foresight, and she called herself in her second novel, she wrote 22 novels, in her second novel, which is called Robinson, she described herself as Muriel the Marvel with the X-ray eyes. Now, most novelists rework their past experiences in their books, but Muriel's novels describe her future experience. Nothing that happened to Muriel Spark hadn't been written about her in a book first. And this is what I discovered when I was writing Electric Spark. It was a very, very disturbing discovery, I can tell you. For example, Muriel Spark's first book was A Life of Mary Shelley, author of Frankenstein. So she began her writing life as a biographer before she became a novelist. And in her biography of Mary Shelley, she described Mary Shelley's being blackmailed over a cache of love letters that she'd written to a man. Now, 20 years later, exactly the same thing happened to Spark. She was blackmailed over a cache of love letters. After Spark described a couple being killed by lightning, she was also struck by lightning. Her first novel was called The Comforters, published in 1957, just after she converted to Catholicism. And the novel was about a young female novelist who converts to Catholicism and then has a breakdown during which she believes that she's been written about as a character in a biography. She then, 40 years later, commissioned a biography of herself by her first biographer, Martin Stannard, and found that she was being written about as a character in a biography, and she nearly lost her mind with distress. Her friend, the Australian novelist Shirley Hazzard, said about her, "Somehow things happened, odd things, when Muriel was around. Evelyn Waugh told his children to pray for her because she was a saint and her own prayers always worked. And the critic, Frank Kermode, said that Muriel Spark had the evil eye. Bernard Levin said that had she lived in an earlier century, she would doubtless have been burnt at the stake as the witch that she was." Now, I don't think any of these people are exaggerating. Spark lived in a dimension that she called space, time-space, as opposed to Einstein's space-time. And we can see this recreated in her novels, where if anyone's had the pleasure, and it's an immense pleasure, of reading a Muriel Spark novel, you'll see that she uses the rhetorical trope of prolepsis, where she describes what's going to happen at the end of the book. So, for example, in one of her stories, she says, "He looked as if he would murder me, and he did." She often described ghosts coming back to get revenge on the men who had murdered them. In another of her novels called The Driver's Seat, she describes a woman, an unknown woman, travelling to an unknown destination in order to find a man who would murder her. And she bludgeons this man into murdering her. He doesn't want to do it, but she makes him murder her. And when he tries to rape her, she says, no, rape me after I'm dead, not now. So there's something kind of absolutely chilling about Muriel Spark. And she says on the first page of the novel, The Driver's Seat, she says, "Lisa," this is the woman's name, "Lisa will be found tomorrow morning dead from multiple stab wounds, her wrists bound with a silk scarf and her ankles bound with a man's necktie in the grounds of an empty villa in the park of a foreign city to which she is travelling on a flight now boarding gate 14. Now, I see The Driver's Seat as really an anticipation of what happened when Muriel Spark invited her first biographer into her life. She effectively just chose randomly a man who would murder her. And that's what happened. When she met Martin Stannard, she said to him, "Treat me as though I were dead." And had he read more of Muriel Spark's short stories, he'd know that the dead are never dead in a Muriel Spark novel. They're always there to avenge their deaths on their murderers. And the fight between Spark and Martin Stannard went on until she died. And his book finally got published, so it was in the pipeline for 17 years. She commissioned it, then tried to stop him from publishing it. She felt as if he was blackmailing her when she had invited him into her life. And it was finally published 3 years after she died. Now, Spark's life, I discovered, is riddled with strange coincidences. Her first novel, as I said, The Comforters, about the heroine's breakdown, was written and published at exactly the same time as Evelyn Waugh's last comic novel, The Ordeal of Gilbert Pinfold, which is exactly the same plot. As you know, it's about a man who suffers a breakdown on a cruise brought on by mixing his medication with alcohol, which is exactly what Spark's breakdown was brought on by as well. Now, these two novels appeared at the same time. Evelyn Waugh, they're both Catholic converts. Evelyn Waugh was very sanguine about the coincidence, and he said, "Well, as long as people don't think I wrote The Comforters," but he was obviously slightly worried that people would think he wrote The Comforters. And I think that Muriel Spark was actually quite disturbed by the coincidence, because it was quite disturbing. They both of them assumed it was God's plot. Muriel Spark converted to Catholicism so that she could live inside God's plot, because she thought, of course, God sees the end as well as me. I mean, he knows exactly where my story's going. So I feel safe inside his plot. So she thought, well, if this is God's plot, that Evelyn Waugh and I write the same book about the same experience, published at the same time, and people think we wrote the other's book, so be it. Now, when I was writing about Muriel Spark, I found myself entering time-space too, and I can tell you it wasn't a very comfortable experience. Spark described herself as a magnet for the experiences she needed when she was writing a novel, and I found that I was a magnet for the experiences I needed when I was writing Electric Spark, that almost everything I wanted to happen sort of happened. So I'd wake up one morning thinking, I just have to get Muriel Spark's family tree sorted out, and I would get an email that day from someone in Canada saying, "I'm wondering if you need Muriel Spark's family tree sorted out, because I happen to be an expert on the Spark family tree." And I'd wake up thinking, I need to work out what happened between Spark and her son Robin, because they were estranged, and I get a letter from someone saying, just in case you're interested in Spark's relationship with her son Robin, I was a good friend of his and I'd love to talk to you about it. And this went on throughout the writing of the book. I felt as though I were caught in her force field. Normally, when I write a literary biography, I feel as if I try as hard as I can to inhabit the heads of the people I write about. But with Spark, it was the other way around. I felt that she was inhabiting my head. And at times, I felt as if I was actually possessed by her. I was. Her voice was so, so clear in my mind. And she described writing her novels as a process of tuning into voices in the air. She said she just sat down, held a pen and just waited to see what fell on the page. And that's effectively what happened when I wrote this book. I wrote it in 4 months, and it normally takes me 4 years to write a book. And my husband said it was like watching someone in a trance state. And I was carrying an awful lot of material in my head, but I didn't know how... I didn't really know where the writing was coming from. I became completely obsessed with her and with her extraordinary story. I had very strange experiences as well. I mean, as if that wasn't strange enough. Like when Spark described in a letter I was reading that she'd had to have a tooth removed. And I felt, oh, God, that must have been awful. I then, the next week, went to the dentist and he said, I think you need a tooth removed. So the things that happened to her body tended to happen to my body. When she went through a kind of a sort of paranoid attack in her middle years, and I found myself also getting very paranoid. I found myself... Thank you. When she wrote about being burgled, I was also burgled. I mean, it was really, really strange. I've got 1 minute left, so what will I end with? I'm going to end with saying I am a very different person as a result of my experience with Muriel Spark. I'm a much less sceptical person than I am, and I'm much less ironic than I used to be, and I'm much less judgmental than I used to be, and I'm a lot more frightened than I used to be. I feel as if I've been to some really weird places. I believe in things now that I didn't believe in before. You could say I'm a lot more open-minded. Hilary Mantel, who is, I think, the writer who's imbibed most of Muriel Spark's mischief, said, for some people, being dead is only a relative condition. They reek more than the living do. And Spark, who I think is the necromancer of the modern novel, was one of those people. Thank you.
You have been listening to Radio Aldie, brought to you by Bailey Gifford. Why not get 3 trial issues of the Aldie magazine for just £1? Sure you'll enjoy it. We'll then charge you £25.75 for every 6 issues. Just go to checkout.theoldie.co.uk/offers and enter old trial as one word in capitals. That's checkout.theoldie.co.uk/offers and enter old trial.